You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, to the Lakers Outsiders Live / Locked On Lakers Live. We had a perfectly sophisticated way of starting the show. We're off to a phenomenal start. I'm here joined by Gary Kester. He's on the other end of this thing. He usually hosts it when I don't jump in and ask him, hey, can I just do this as to be lazy for my job tomorrow? So, Gary, how you doing?
I would say I'm doing pretty good. I would say we're off to about as good of a start as Luke Walton's rotations were tonight.
I'm actually the Lakers. This thing got off to kind of a slow start. I in my assessment, I would probably say that we're getting punked right now. So, hey, Andrew Bogut, how you doing, bud?
Got to add some toughness to this podcast.
This is a legitimate quote from Luke Walton on why he thought Andrew Bogut and Corey Brewer needed to come into the game at the same damn time. We needed some toughness out there, and Bogut's a big, tough man. He said that after he thought that the Lakers were getting punked. He said that also with his arms crossed. So, Gary, I don't think it's time to worry about Luke Walton. I'm not really going to go there, but I do think like if it was the former coach saying these things, how do you think that goes over? And at what point do we maybe say, hey, dude, you need to be better at what you're doing?
I mean, if it was the former coach, we'd be leading the mob right now in Los Angeles, probably going to his house. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. You can't look at this team and just say, you know, they lack toughness or whatever, when the primary sub that you put out there to add toughness was the problem. Like, he was the reason you were down so big so early with Andrew Bogut. I mean, I don't know how many times you got to watch a ball handler just go right by him on, you know, in a pick and roll or on a switch or whatever, and think that toughness is the problem. Like, no, you're getting killed on that end of the floor. Maybe get somebody a little more mobile out there. Because with Randall, I mean, you don't have the same issue that you were having with Bogut. And I don't know. I just don't see why Bogut is even getting minutes at this point.
See, the issue with me is, and with the previous coach, my annoyance came from, hey, at some point, just talk some strategy here. Like, at some point, where's the adjustment that you're going to make? And where in the post game quotes are you gonna maybe take some accountability and recognize, hey, what might be going on here? And I would always get really annoyed with, like, every single game it was man up this, it was we were soft here, we were man up, we didn't man up, we got punked, we did, it was this, and eventually it just, you can say that every so often. And look, frankly, I think there is a point to be made there that the Lakers gave up way too many offensive rebounds over the course of the game. Like, I think it's perfectly fine to say that every so often, but as soon as he goes back to this well 2, 3, 4 times over the course of a month or so, that's when I think, you know, my former head coach Spidey senses will be going off a little bit more. But I'll say this: Andrew Bogut, Corey Brewer should not see an NBA court for the rest of the season. I've watched enough of it. Bogut especially.
Yeah, I tweeted out that Corey Brewer should be suspended anytime he takes a shot outside the paint. I think Luke Walton should be suspended anytime he puts those two in the game.
Poor Brewer. Like, you can, he is one of the nicest people, right? That mm-hmm. Everybody who has ever covered Corey Brewer says he is an amazing individual. And in the exit interviews last year, I thought Brewer gave some of the most insightful answers And he deserves credit for thinking about the game the way he thinks about the game. Mm-hmm. All that said, Gary, if I was to tell you, hey, would you like to go on a blind date? And the first thing I said to you was, well, she's a really nice person. You'd be a little concerned, right?
I feel like this is a trap question.
Well, I mean, if I was to say like, it'd be one thing if, all right, if that was the first thing that I said and you said, well, okay, that's cool. Like what is nice about her? Well, she gives great quotes. Again, you'd be a little nervous. And then, you know, well, okay, what does she look like? Well, she's a balding middle-aged man who has to wear a headband to cover up the bad hairline. Well, all right, that was the analogy went too far. But what does Corey Brewer honestly add? Like, I had this back and forth with Eric Pincus a while back on Twitter, where like the only NBA talent that Corey Brewer seems to have is infinite turbo. It's not, he can't shoot. He can't defend anybody. He has the mental awareness of Aaron Baines' man bun. It's just, there's nothing that he really adds to the team when he's out there. And look, I think if it were me, I would fiddle around with small lineups and maybe slide KCP down to the three and have Jordan Clarkson and Lonzo Ball out there at the same time. We've run out of reasons to have Corey Brewer on the court. I'm putting this, if you give me a single good reason why Corey Brewer should be on an NBA court in 2017, I will delete my account.
The only reason I can think of is garbage time.
Not working. I might my account.
No, but so with Corey Brewer, like for some reason I just thought of this. But for those of you that have ever seen the movie Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby, there's that scene where he's trying to kind of get his groove back and he puts the blindfold on in the neighborhood street and he's bouncing off car to car on each side and then drives right into the house. To me, that's Corey Brewer on a basketball court.
With the basketball.
Yeah.
I thought you were gonna go with the scene where he thinks he's on fire and he's running.
Yeah, I mean that works too.
He's running around in his underwear and a helmet. And Bogut doesn't even bring energy. Like tonight it was astonishing. I mean, he picked up three fouls in like three successive plays, which brought back memories of Travis Knight for both Lakers and Celtics fans. So that was fun. But other than that, he was abysmal out there and he was turning the ball over. Luke Walton said that some of Bogut's turnovers came from guys not looking for the ball when he had it, which makes me wonder if maybe he is blackmailing Luke Walton into these minutes and to these post-game quotes. But all right, point blank, do you think Luke Walton lost the Lakers this game tonight?
Yeah. I mean, when I think of where to primarily point the blame, I think it's on him. Like, here's the scope of how bad Bogut was tonight and why, I mean, it makes no sense for them to put him in the game before Julius Randle, especially in a matchup like this with the Celtics. Obviously Baines was a problem inside, but I mean, Bogut, like I said earlier, Bogut was just had guys just going right by him, going all the way to the bucket. Like it was a layup line with him out there. But he played 5 minutes tonight. First of all, longest 5 minutes in the history of basketball.
Yep.
And he was minus 10. How are you minus 10 in 5 minutes of play with two turnovers?
I actually pulled this up on purpose before we went live. This is from Darius Soriano at From Blue and Gold. The lineup of Lonzo Ball, KCP, Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, and Julius Randle, which has been the Lakers' best lineup by far tonight. They played 6 minutes together, had an offensive rating of 141.1 and a defensive rating of 78.1. And this has been the one constant from the Lakers season. Now, it's a tiny sample size. I think, including tonight, they have played roughly 24 minutes together, but they've had a plus a plus 50 rating in those 23 minutes together, net rating. In the 6 minutes, Corey Brewer and Andrew Bogut shared the court tonight. The Lakers had an offensive rating of 33.6. 33.6.
That's like throwing a high school team out there.
That's a really good player's PER. An individual player. Like Anthony Davis could go 1-on-5 out there and throw together a higher offensive rating. It was really the other thing too is I had a question a while back from a fan of the show on iTunes, and they asked, hey, what might be going on here with Julius Randle? Are the Lakers playing him as few minutes as they are? Because again, tonight, Julius Randle had in 21 minutes, 16 points and 12 boards, and was a plus 5 in a game that the Lakers lost by double digits, right? So somebody asked me a while back, hey, what might be going on with Julius Randle? Are the Lakers intentionally tanking his value so that he signs at a lower rate in the upcoming offseason? I said no for like a zillion reasons. And one of the reasons was if that was to get back to his teammates, right? If his teammates were to find out that he is not being played as much as he should be, so that the Lakers can improve the chances of keeping him this coming offseason, his teammates would get frustrated. And I thought tonight, the Lakers started with decent energy. They were missing shots, and sometimes that affects energy. But I thought for the most part, before Bogut and Brewer came in, I wasn't disappointed with what I was seeing from the Lakers in terms of energy. Those guys come in, and I thought the team-wide energy just fell into the basement.
Yeah, I mean, I got home a couple minutes into the game, and I think I even tweeted it out, but there was probably a good 5-6 minute stretch of real time that I didn't see the Lakers even get a shot attempt. They were flat on offense. They weren't moving, and it led to a bunch of turnovers and offensive fouls. And, yeah, like I sat there and I was like, I haven't seen the Lakers even attempt a shot yet, and I've been sitting here for a good 5 to 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and then they're getting killed on the other end. And, yeah, I mean, the lead just ballooned out of like nothing. And, yeah, I mean, when you throw two guys out there in Brewer and Bogut that just – do nothing offensively, yeah, your offense is going to be terrible. Like they're just you're playing 3-on-5 on that end.
And the guy leading that, you know, the point guard, the de facto point guard of that group was Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah.
Like, how do you think that's going to go? Like, we've been waiting for Jordan Clarkson to be a decent, and he's, I mean, to his credit, he's been okay in that role kind of sort of this year, but we know at this point we're 4-5 years into the Jordan Clarkson experience. He's not a point guard, and he's definitely not a point guard when he's accompanied by Corey Brewer and Andrew Bogut. It's just, it's too bad because like the Lakers hired the NBA's head of analytics. That was a big story a few weeks back. And the thinking there was, okay, cool. They're moving into this next phase in their own personal analysis of what's going on within the team. Net rating isn't a crazy analytic, man. And this lineup that has produced an insane net rating is not playing nearly enough minutes together. And that's where an assistant coach should step up and say, hey, dude, why Bogut? Like what should have happened is Luke Walton goes down to the end of the bench. And as he's walking down there to the end of the bench to grab Andrew Bogut and Corey Brewer, Brian Shaw needs to start rapping to him why it's a terrible idea. Like, or one of his assistant coaches needs to stick their leg out and say, no, we can't do this. This is not going to work out. And unfortunately, the only person in the building, it seemed, who thought that was a good idea was the person who could make that call.
Yeah, and there was, I think there was a moment late in the first quarter where they kind of panned over to the Laker bench, and you could see Julius Randle sitting there, and you could just tell by the look on his face, it was just like, how in the world is this dude playing ahead of me? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, Randle has been, you know, the thing with Julius is obviously offensively, he still has a lot of the same flaws that he did. I mean, he has for years. I mean, since he became a Laker, you know, and that's unfortunate, but there's no denying how good he has been defensively for this team this year and how much of a difference that's made. And that's why the Lakers, you know, defensively have actually been a good team this year, because he's mm-hmm. made a huge difference there. And, you know, with Lopez starting and, you know, he's been a decent rim protector to this point. But yeah, I just like with that small lineup that you were talking about earlier with, I mean, like you said, it's a small sample size, but the offensive rating and the defensive rating that they posted tonight, I mean, it's been a common trend throughout the season. And it's like, how do you wait until you're down 17 to say, okay, I'll put Julius in now? Like, I don't get it. I mean, you know, if you want to keep a guy's minutes down on the second night of a back-to-back or whatever, fine. But they've had the past couple of days off, and this is the first game of the road trip. And I know they have a game tomorrow, but, I mean, come on. Like, this game was there for the taking if you don't just completely blow the start of the game.
Well, and look, I thought Luke gave some insightful context as to why Randle doesn't play as many minutes as maybe many would hope for because of how productive he's been in the minutes that he's played, right? He said it was a couple weeks ago, and he said that Randle plays, when he plays with full energy, he's a completely different player than when he plays, you know, lackadaisically. And so I get that. So he's thinking, all right, think of it as like a specialist pitcher who comes in and only throws one inning because he throws 100 miles an hour every single pitch. And it'd be ridiculous to hope that guy would come in and now throw three innings and keep up that same velocity. I kind of get it. But I would also like to see him fail before we jump to that conclusion. This isn't, mm-hmm. it's one thing with the aforementioned player or pitcher that you're talking about, you know, somebody's elbow falling off because you're asking too much. That's not the case in basketball, man. Like you miss a couple rotations and then you just move on. All right, fine. He can't play more than 20, 25 minutes, but we haven't seen any evidence to that. And maybe something is going on in practice that we're missing, but we haven't seen any evidence to point to the fact that this dude should only play 20, 22 minutes a game. And as that is the case, it's all the more frustrating.
And it's especially frustrating too, because I get it. Like if, you know, you're trying not to wear him out or play him extended minutes and you know, kind of have a tired Julius Randle out there, but this guy's in the best shape he's ever been in. Like that was well documented over the summer that he got his body ready and he's ready to go. And with Larry Nance Jr. out, I mean, there's no reason to me why the Lakers shouldn't stagger their big man rotation between the three of Kyle Kuzma, Brook Lopez, and Julius Randle. To me, two of those three should always be out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe you try and do something else. Maybe throw Zubats out there. I mean, I'd rather play Zubats over Andrew Bogut at this point, even if it's just for a couple minutes. But yeah, I mean, to me, you've got to stagger that rotation. And once Nance comes back, then maybe you kind of spread out the minutes a little bit more, so you're not riding those horses too hard. But yeah, I mean, just it's been a recurring problem with Luke Walton and his rotation. And it's just something I've always been very, very critical of. And I know a lot of other people have too. Just a lot of it doesn't make sense. I mean, you can still kind of keep your, you know, your big lineup or your, you know, your dangerous lineup that we talked about earlier intact. And cause like when you look at Lopez, he only played 17 minutes tonight too. So yeah, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like those three with Nance out, you've got to stagger them so that two of them are on the court at the same time. Or if not, it's got to be very, very small stretches that they're not.
On the positive side of things, the Lakers went into Boston and competed. I mean, granted, Celtics didn't have Al Horford. They still don't have Gordon Hayward ankle. They do not Almost killed Gary. Jason Tatum exited the game early. So this was not a Celtics team that was 100% by any stretch of the imagination. And yet they went into Boston and they fought back. And I believe at one point the game was a 4-point game. It was the closest that the Lakers got to. Come I might be mistaken. Two. Was it? All right. So they climbed out of a 21-point deficit thanks to their head coach and came back to 2 points. What were the positives that you saw from tonight's game?
I mean, it was Julius Randle. To me, he was the big positive. I mean, 16 points, 12 boards in 21 minutes. He was the only player that was positive tonight in terms of plus minus, which I say this every time on the Lakers Outsiders podcast, that, you know, it can be a flawed stat, but I don't think tonight it was. Tonight, I think it was very, you know, accurate.
He was the best player on the court, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, what he does for this team defensively, it's so evident, because early in the game, I mean, Boston was just getting layup after layup after layup. And, you know, with Randle coming in, I mean, Randle, you know, albeit isn't like a great rim protector, I think he does what he can with kind of the physical tools that he has. But yeah, I mean, he provided such a spark tonight. And it's just so frustrating to me that, like, as good as he was, we only got him 21 minutes. Yeah. Like, I'm okay with bringing certain guys off the bench. I'm fine, honestly, with Randle coming off the bench and feasting against second units and so on and so forth. The whole bench thing isn't the issue. It's the amount of minutes. Like, I mean, and he should be finishing these games, especially when he plays as well as he does. Because, like, when guys play well, you've got to reward them with that. And I know that means a lot to Randle, because you can just tell that he hates, you know, sitting on the bench, especially when the team is struggling like they were.
That's kind of the sad thing, is that I mean, because Woj reported tonight that basically Julius Randle is all but gone, right? Mm-hmm. Either he's going to be gone in the offseason, or he's going to be traded at the deadline or before the deadline. And can't you already see the headlines, or can't you already see the quotes or the leaked reports of, you know, Julius Randle just wasn't a leader. He sulked with his role change. He, you know, they weren't happy with his maturity and this and that and the other. Like, can't you just see that coming? And I tweeted that out, and it's going to be really too bad, because that's the kind of thing that all organizations do. The Lakers won't be unique in doing that. But I just, they did it with Russell. They're doing it right now with Julius Randle. And at some point, people might wake up and say, like, instead of appealing to authority the way everybody loves to appeal to authority, but eventually people will wake up and say, like, actually, no, there's a constant here. And it's weird how this works out.
Well, it'd be so unfortunate, too, if they – because, I mean, I think you can net a first-round pick for Julius Randle, especially the way he's played this year. But, I mean, I just – I'm terrified of a scenario where the Lakers trade Randle, say, in February, right before the deadline. They get an expiring contract and a first-round pick or whatever. And then, say, summer rolls around and they get nobody. Then it's like you just cleared more cap space and gave up a good young player for what? You know, at a certain point, the Lakers need to – obviously, if the right Luol Deng deal comes around where you're not giving up way too much, like, that's fine. I think that's another issue in itself. But at this point, it's like, how about you kind of wait and see, like, if you can actually get these guys? Because then, I mean, you can come to a verbal agreement during the moratorium period and then say, okay, now we need to clear some space. Like, it's like what the Rockets did with Chris Paul last summer, mm-hmm. right? Like, Chris Paul says, hey, I want to play for you guys. I'm going to opt in. And we can do a sign and trade or a trade with the Clippers. And it's like, okay. And then you saw the Rockets start to clear some space so that they can make that deal work and so on and so forth. Like, you can't sacrifice good young players that especially are difference makers, like Randle has been defensively this year, in just creating a hope, like a chance that you might get some of these guys. Like, if you're going to sacrifice them, you do it when you've got something concrete.
Well, like, the way I kind of put it is, so my wife and I, we have our financial advisor. And when we were looking around and we were talking to friends about who we should look at to talk to to bring somebody on as that role. It was just, people just said, like, this guy who we talked to is really good. He makes a lot of sense. He's really presentable and this and that and the other. If, like, the first time we meet him, he says, all right, I have this great idea as an opportunity for you guys to double both of your living wages so far this year. I need you guys to go to Las Vegas and drop every single dollar that you'll possibly make on black and see how that goes for you, right? even if we win, I'm still going to be kind of suspect about the dude's advice, right? And like, that's kind of what the Lakers have done, is they have said, okay, we are going to make this insane gamble. We are going to put it could very well turn into multiple assets betting on a long shot, right? In that LeBron and or Paul George and or somebody else might come next summer. And even if it works out, you kind of have to wonder about the process that led you to that decision, right? And if it all works out, look, that's a hypothetical question. That's hypothetical analysis. At the end of the day, if it works out, they will have those guys, and the focus will be moving forward from that point on. If they don't get those guys, heads should roll, right?
Oh man, Lakers Twitter this summer, if the Lakers don't sign anybody in free agency, it's going to be a civil war, I think, is what it's going to be.
I'm already blocking certain accounts just as a precaution. other positives I thought from tonight. So Kyle Kuzma, I thought this was by far the worst game he's played as a rookie. And yet I still saw a lot of energy on the defensive side from him, which for scorers, especially when a player doesn't shoot very well, especially a young player, doesn't shoot very well, there's some sulking that goes on. They'll miss assignments on rotations. They won't rebound, this and that. And I mean, we did see some not rebounding from everybody across the roster, but I thought Kuzma showed some maturity that is beyond his NBA years in just competing despite not shooting very well.
Yeah. I mean, he kept playing. Like, it didn't look like it, like, really, really bothered him. I mean, he just kept playing like he normally does. Hashtag Mamba mentality, right?
Kuz Mamba mentality.
But I mean, like, that's the thing. Yeah, like you said, with young players, I mean, when the shot's not falling, and I was kind of curious to see how he would handle that, because, you know, I mean, he's a rookie. There's going to be these games. I've been saying this, you know, since preseason when he was still lighting it up. He's a rookie. These nights are going to happen. But what's important is to see kind of how he responds to it. And effort-wise, he was still good. He was still really good effort-wise. You saw him, I think, really crashing the offensive glass a lot and trying to kind of keep the ball alive and things like that. But, yeah, I think effort-wise, I thought he was just fine. Like, sometimes the shots just don't fall. It is what it is. So Kuzma, I not worried about it at all. I was actually kind of pleased that he had kind of, you know, his struggles tonight, but he still played really, really hard. And I think he still made a difference out there.
Yeah. You never hope that somebody plays poorly, but you do want to see how they handle that adversity. And I thought he handled it really well. And then the last guy that I wanted to talk about before we call it a night here was Brandon Ingram, who I don't have his stat line in front of me, but continues to figure things out, it really looks like. And again, on a night where, you know, Julius Randle is the lone player with a plus minus that was in the positives, a lot of the Lakers struggled offensively. I thought Ingram had a few shots that, you know, like, KCP is really good at taking shots to take the Lakers out of momentum. I thought Ingram was really good tonight at building momentum with small things throughout the game, and obviously making baskets that the Lakers desperately needed. The one shot that comes to mind was the pull-up jumper on the baseline. It was late in the shot clock. It looked super clean. It actually kind of reminded me of, like, the shot Kobe used to make when he was in his prime. But Ingram's starting to get it, and it's kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, his line tonight, he had 18 points on 7 of 11 shooting. 3 missed free throws. That's kind of a thing. I wish he would kind of shoot better from the free throw line, but we'll take baby steps. But he had 7 rebounds, a couple of steals, only 2 turnovers. But yeah, I mean, just the increased efficiency has been, I mean, because he, when it came to efficiency, he was so bad last year, like so bad.
And like over the preseason, you know, first game of the year, he was not very good.
Yeah, and tonight was kind of just a continuation, I think, from the second game of the year to now. I think he's picking and choosing his spots a lot better. And you can tell with his drives to the basket. I think he's starting to really figure out when he drives and the defense collapse, okay, this is when I need to kick it out. And if they don't, it's like, okay, I can use my length to finish over the top of this guy or finish around this guy. And yeah, just the decision making has been so much better for him. Obviously, I want to see him take some more 3-pointers because, you know, sometimes he shoots long 2s that it's like, I wish you'd just take a step back and, and make it a 3. But like I said, with the decision making being what it is right now, at his age, that's such an encouraging sign. It's such an encouraging sign. It looks like the game is really, really kind of slowing down for him. And I think his defensive impact is kind of flying a little under the radar, because I think defensively he makes a bigger impact than, you know, what you might see in the box score. But yeah, I mean, if you didn't bring him up, I was going to bring him up. I thought he played a pretty solid game tonight. And it's, like I said, the efficiency continues to get better and better. And it's just great to see.
I don't think there's a very long list of guys who are in their second season under the age of 21, averaging 15.5 points a game on the shooting rate that he currently is, especially coming off of some of the struggles that he had last year. And he continues to impress. And like Harrison and I talked about last on the last show, like, who, you know, which young guy's progress or what's the main storyline or the top storyline of this year. And to me, it's Brandon Ingram by far, because if Brandon Ingram is a bust, and D'Angelo Russell gets traded and Julius Randle is either not re-signed in the offseason and you, or either he isn't signed in the offseason or you trade him at the trade deadline, then you had 3 lottery picks in the top 10, 2 in the top 2 that you really don't have much to show for. Right. So it's good to see that there's a return on the investment at the top end of the lottery. And hopefully things turn around in terms of the narrative on Julius Randle, because he's good enough that the Lakers should consider him, you know, somebody that they need to keep around long term. Hopefully that changes soon. But kudos to Brandon Ingram for continuing to prove me especially wrong, because I was definitely standing on a ledge at one point early on in the year.
That's one of those things that you hope you're really wrong on.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I keep getting grilled for a Brooke Lopez tweet that I said at the time he hadn't been really good to that point. And then I think he rattled off 3 like monster games in a row. So everybody kept bringing up that tweet. It's like, I'm glad I was wrong about that. But tonight, he honestly wasn't that good. But anyways, I mean, it's with like opinions, you know, especially on the team, like people kind of lose sight of the fact that it's like, we want the team to be successful. It's just like, it's not like we're rooting against these guys. It's just an observation. And yeah, like, I mean, I had legitimate concerns about Ingram too, about, you know, in the preseason. And I try not to look too much in the preseason, but I was just kind of watching. I was like, man, he's really struggling to create, whether it's his own shot or shots for others. And since the second game of the year, it's been a complete turnaround. I'd say this is beyond what I expected from him, like from the second game of the year till now. Like, I think he's just been really, really impressive.
Yeah. And hopefully it continues, right? Just as, you know, you just said a second ago, if you and I criticize somebody on the team, it's with the disclaimer, which should be obvious, but it's with the disclaimer of, I hope I'm wrong, but I'm not impressed to this point. Right. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, I'm happy that I'm wrong, I'm saying I hope that I continue to be really wrong moving forward, right? Like I hope that people were that old takes exposed account pulls up one of those tweets that says, I really wish Ingram, because I haven't deleted the tweet, I don't think, I wish that Ingram was the one who got traded out with Timofey Mozgov. I think that was one of the things that I sent out. And I hope that that's one of the things that, like, Laker Twitter frames and says, like, aha, you moron. I hope that, that continues to be the case with Ingram.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Other than that, the Lakers, by the time everybody is listening to this, if you aren't listening live, thank you if you are listening live or watching live. The Lakers, by the time people who are listening to this on the Locked On Lakers feed, the Lakers will play tonight. They will play the Washington Wizards, and John Wall and Bradley Beal. We'll see if they actually show no mercy this time. That'll be kind of fun to watch. But other than that, the Lakers lose to the Boston Celtics, which is never fun. And the worst part is that I feel like this was a winnable game, that they didn't. They both didn't play very well, and Luke Walton didn't coach very well, and yet they were in it till just about the bitter end. So, you know, if nothing else, it's good that these guys continue to compete. Thank you, Gary Kester, for hopping on with me for this. Gary usually hosts when we go live here on the Google Hangouts and all of the – I'm terrible with technology. So he usually hosts Locked On or the Lakers Outsiders live. Thanks, Gary, for letting me take the wheel here. I am Anthony Irwin. We'll be back at it again, I believe, after the Wizards game, maybe with Harrison. He's back at the spa. We'll talk to you. we'll talk to you soon. Make sure you're following the show on Megaphone/Panoply, TuneIn, iTunes, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Outsiders, and Lakers Nation. Have a good one, everybody.